The UK shows were always my favorite, you know? People would go off.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
You're listening to episode 122 of Sapnin Podcast with myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend and co-host, Morgan Richards.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards. And as you can probably imagine, I'm not O-fucking-K. But I am alive, full of adrenaline, for this dope conversation.
I see what you've done there. I see what you've done. You've used multiple songs over multiple things. But this week's podcast is absolutely fucking unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Because it features Mikey Way and David Debiak of the Fantastic Electric Century, amongst other bands.
Yes, and oh my God, I'm so excited for this. Electric Century, the passion project from two of alternative music's biggest influences, Mikey Way of My Chemical Romance and David Debiak of Sleep Station, are back with a whole new record, graphic novel, an entire world of concepts, characters and art for you to explore. And let's be honest, having any of these gentlemen on individually is a huge deal. Their careers speak for themselves, there's so much history between them, but having them on together is really unique. It's rare that any of them do interviews or press as it is, but we've told that this is the first time they've ever done anything like this together, and you're going to hear them discuss and learn a lot of things that they've never spoken about to each other. Nevertheless, the world. There's a lot of trust being given to us with this, and I'm extremely proud, excited, and close to tears fangirling that we're able to sit down with them and tell the story of Electric Century.
Yes, exclusive. Exclusive. Over on Sapnin Podcast. Yes, we couldn't get over it. We had a message from Hayley Connolly saying, do you fancy doing Electric Century? And we jumped at the chance, and what a bloody great chat this is. Like I've said in previous episodes, I often imagine most people have forgotten what my face looks like because it's just plain like a man's thigh, right? So the fact that we got to hang out with Mikey and he remembered and he was cool and yeah, we had such a great chat and it was lovely to see David and Mikey interact and talk about things on the record that they hadn't previously talked about together as well. It was just amazing. Like we talked about everything from the Electric Century records to some of their favourite times in other bands and stuff, and massive moments for them and massive moments for us as well with them. So yeah, what an absolutely amazing chat. Thanks again to Hayley Connolly. Thank you very much to Mikey Way. Thank you very much to David Debiak. Yeah, unbelievable. What a fucking great... I left this podcast absolutely beaming.
Same.
It's powered me. Yeah. It's powered me for a few days since. Let's just say that.
Just going to get that energy, and I hope a lot of the listeners do too. But yeah, just two very beautiful and wholesome human beings. I'm excited for everyone to hear this. And as you mentioned, Sean, we talk about everything from their new self-titled second record to creating the graphic novel, their 80s new wave influence, and personal struggles, working with MCR family Ray Toro as a producer. Looking back at moments from their separate journeys, the famous New Jersey music scene, and obviously, we had to get Mikey's take on Sean's famous Brian May at Reading story.
Yeah, that was that was wild. But yeah, thank you very much again to both of those guys. We enjoyed it, and I know that those boys enjoyed it because we heard back off Ailey saying, yeah, Mikey DM'd me on Instagram saying he enjoyed it. So,
nice.
Honest, he did enjoy it. I'm not just saying the word enjoy constantly, but yeah, this is fucking one of my favourite chats that we've done for a while. We've done loads of favourite chats. So, this was really, really lovely, and I enjoyed it very, very much.
Do you know what this makes me feel like, though? You know that Paul Rudd meme of him just being like, hey, look at us. Who would have thought?
Not me. Look at us. Yeah. It's mad, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. If we just creeping ever closer to a big interview. But yeah, it was awesome to see Mikey again. Lovely to meet David. What a lovely, lovely chap. And yeah. Thank you very much to the boys for speaking to us, and thank you for the music over the years again.
Yes.
They're going to get bored of hearing me say that, I think.
Yes, but before we get into things, just very quickly, if you enjoy this podcast and you like our rambles or you've listened to us before, we'd very much appreciate you if you could go and check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/sapnin. Over there, you can help us keep making these podcasts each and every week. Every Friday, we release one. We've done it for 122 weeks in a row. That is absolutely insane. So if you'd like to help us do that, meet a community of incredible people that will become your best friends and get some extra bonuses from us, including Q&A sessions, extra podcasts, and just those mad rambles, please head over to patreon.com/sapnin. Obviously, times are hard with everything going on. So if you can't do that, just give us a follow on our social media pages at sapninpod.
Yes, on Twitter and Instagram, at SapninPod, at SAPPENINPOD. Like the new metal band, but without the dreads. That's at SapninPod, at SAPPENINPOD. And yeah, like Morgan said, if you've listened to two or more episodes of this and enjoyed it and have chuckled at all, please think about supporting the lads. Get involved over our Patreon, please. Literally, as a major supermarket chain says, every little helps. And I can't believe we've been going 122 weeks. That's mental. If you had told me when we started this, we're going to do this 122 weeks in a row, I'd go, ha, surely not. I'll be dead by then. But no, here we are, still going, still bringing fantastically brilliant, funny, heartfelt content to the world. So yes, if you've listened to three or more episodes, please think about getting involved with the Patreon. Because you owe us at least that, you bugger.
Well,
sorry, I've gone mad.
Well said, Sean. But without any further ado, this is the wonderful Mikey and Dave from Electric Century right here on Sapnin Podcast. Who would have fucking thought?
Not me. Sapnin!
Sapnin!
Sapnin! Oh, I have gone proper mad now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Sapnin!
Yes!
Yes! This week's guests are David and Mikey from the fantastic Electric Century.
Yes.
How are you guys?
Oh, so good.
Thanks for having us.
Here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
This is awesome.
Wow, Dave, I haven't seen you in a very long time.
I know, we don't see each other.
I don't see you.
It's good to see you, buddy.
Yeah, this
I tell you good. What.
Yeah, you two just carry on with band stuff. we'll wait for a bit, and then we'll just get it towards the end. But thank you so much. Yeah, thank you so much for giving us your time. And I've already mentioned it to David, Mikey, but congratulations on this new record.
Yeah,
thank you. It feels good to have it out. You know, it's something we've been working on it for many years, so it's good to finally let people experience it and digest it. There's been things that have kind of held it back, you know, like the world kind of held it back at times. But yeah, it's good to finally get something you worked so hard on out and have people be able to enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's so much we want to touch on with this new record and everything, but before we do, just to start, how are the two of you doing with everything lately? How's the kind of last 12 months being in this very weird isolated pandemic world? How have you guys been keeping with everything?
I didn't want to jump on Dave. I thought he was going to start, but no. Here's the score. Is it what anybody wanted? No. You know, were there ups and downs for everybody? Yes. But I feel like the silver lining is we were all given a lot of family time. You know, for me, I have two amazing little girls that I was able to spend a lot of time with and see a lot of milestones, you know, lots of family, you know, my beautiful wife, you know, able to spend time that I wasn't going to have. I was supposed to be on the road. So that's been the past year of my life, you know, just lots of family time, seeing the outdoors, you know, there's safe things to do outdoors. Yeah, just that's been the main thing that I've been enjoying, you know, just like that, maybe like revisiting some old hobbies, reading a lot, playing some video games, nice. Playing a lot of bass, playing a lot of guitar.
Nice. What games have you been
playing?
What games have you been playing?
What games have I've been playing Demon's Souls for PS5.
Nice.
You know the game?
Yeah.
It's brutal hard. I've been playing that. I started the new Stephen King called Later. It's amazing.
So did I, on his recommendation. I'm a couple chapters behind, but we have kind of like an EC book club going now.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
We started a book. Yeah.
That's nice. Is that something that you should maybe do that for the fans and like, you guys should all read the same things at the same time and stuff. I wonder if you could work that into another cycle. Anyway, yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah, I think well, that's the thing. Like this record's like a conceptual base, right? So yeah, so I was already thinking, right, next record, if you all somehow could read the same book. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Dave didn't tell us.
The pandemic has been, you know, extremely, it was when it started, was extremely tough on me. I had a lot of ups and downs, more downs than ups, but as the months have gone on, I've learned to kind of just like find my footing, you know?
Yeah.
For a while there, all I did was send Mikey demos. I was like writing like crazy. And then after
like 10 a day. Yeah. 10 a day.
And then after a while I was like, well, I think I just need to just be for a while. Like Mikey was saying, I found like the silver lining was spending time with my family that I would have normally never had. I spent like, my son is unemployable right now because of the pandemic. He's doing music like crazy, and he's his band is called Vincent and the Noise, and we bounce things off each other, and we spend a lot of time together during the day. And you know, I wouldn't trade that for the world, but you know what we're going through, it's I would have rather it been under different circumstances, you know.
Yeah,
I think
yeah,
we all would have, you know,
for sure.
When you see that death toll just keep rising in your country, and you're like, how did we get here? You know, it's hard to digest. Plus there's been a lot of political turmoil in the United States over the year. So you combine the two, it's a lot of work, a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, I can imagine, but it's great to see that both of you have been keeping well and busy in this time. But I mean, it is one for celebration because the new Electric Century record is out. You're back with your second album and a graphic novel to coincide with everything. I mean, obviously, you guys have been working behind the scenes with this for so long. Are you just happy to get this out there finally now? Because there hadn't been any new release or anything from Electric Century in a while.
Well, I think that the most important thing is that we got it out the way we wanted it to get out. We could have rushed this thing and we could have gone through different avenues of production, but we were able to get this done at our pace and really pick the songs that we wanted to do, you know, all the way through and tell the story in the album the way we wanted to tell it. And by that, we had to cut a lot of fat. And Mikey's responsible for all of that. He's the decider in the band, you know. I really just leave, not so much the decider, but when he tells me that a song is like it fits and it's and we're ready to go, we start working on it, you know. And that's been a huge lift for me as like as a songwriter.
Yeah, you used to just do it yourself. And I remember when we started working together, you were like, wow, like you had never done it before, but it's cool.
I've never collaborated before in my life.
Yeah. With me, I work best in a team setting. You know what I mean? Like I always,
obviously,
like I'm a good team player. I mean, like, I feel like I'm really glad this came out now instead of when it was supposed to come out, because I think it's maybe 10 times better. You know, like we, this was going to come out in 2018, 2019,
oh, wow. 2019.
And it's like the version then, compared to the version now, it's like, I mean, it was a happy accident that we had the time to really dig deep, you know, like there's songs that we were working on to the wire, you know, like, you know, the day before this thing was being mastered, we were finishing songs. Even with the graphic novel, you know, like, you know, I like to say great things take time. And I think, you know, Toby Cypress is a phenomenal artist, and I was blown away by what he was able to visually do in that graphic novel. It was a dream come true, really. You know, I was a fan of his artwork, and, you know, getting to work with him on a project was really amazing for me. So yeah. So getting all the time in the world, like that Twilight Zone episode, all the time in the world. We had all the time in the world to work on this. And I feel like we succeeded in what we were trying to set out to do. You know, I mean, like there's a true freedom to this project. You know, we're not on a record label. You know, it's kind of, we just have complete and total freedom, you know? So I think the end result is very telling of that.
Nice. Yeah, because one of the things I wanted to talk about as well is, like, I'm sure you guys have seen Electric Century being titled as a super group and all this, but it's not just another band. There's a whole new world inside of it, whether it be the concept of creating music and mixing it with that kind of fiction and reality crossover. What's the mindset for you guys going into a project like this? Because there's so many different elements of a novel and storytelling within kind of building up characters and stuff. Do you have to second guess and think a lot of extra material for it and kind of structuring?
Yes. Yes, you do.
We had like 30 songs, right? At some point, 30
more,
40 songs.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, like half, I think maybe half the album was done, and then Z2 had reached out to me, and I never thought of this as a graphic novel at that point. A couple of years ago, maybe like 2015, 2016, I had a sliver of an idea in my head where I was like, maybe, because I mean, I'm a huge Gorillaz and Blur fan, and I kind of thought, kind of what they do where they have a fictional band in a fictional world. And I was like, well, Electric Century can kind of be something like that. And I kind of tucked the idea away in my head. And then while we were writing this album, Z2 reached out and they were like, hey, and on the meeting, Josh over there was like, hey, you know what I kind of see this project as? He's like, I kind of see this as like a Gorillaz. And it was like, the hallway got real long. And I was like, I never told that to anybody. You know, I was like, you're right. Because here's the thing, when we started Electric Century, when we released the first album, I had just gotten out of rehab and I didn't want to tour, you know what I mean? Which, you know, it's not what Dave probably expected or wanted, you know what I mean? It's not what, at the time, I really wanted to go on tour with this thing, you know what I mean? And you know, we got an AP cover, the album came out, everyone was waiting, and then I was like, I don't want to tour. So it was like, I kind of like, you know, I pulled the rug out from under the project in a bit, but I think it was for a noble cause, because
I think so
at
too.
The time Dave's the big, you know, the big reason I went to rehab. I flew into Jersey to write songs with him, and he was like, get in the car, I'm taking you to rehab. You know what I mean? So like this project came at a very delicate time in my life, you know? So coming out of rehab, I, you know, we had all this steam and I was like, I don't want to tour. I'm sorry. And Dave understood, you know what I mean? And I don't know where I would be if I didn't make that move. You know what I mean? And I'm glad I did, but it also turned this project into something cool and different. You know, it's not a machine or a part of a album cycle or a marketing plan or it's two friends making songs that we love, you know, and nobody telling us, well, you got to put the chorus like seven times. You know what I mean? Like we were able to just do it. You know what I mean? So it's a passion project, you know?
Yeah. Well, how was, you mentioned then it's just like you two guys just writing the songs and putting together. How did working with Ray come into all this? Was it just like a no brainer for you guys? Or,
If I could say something about that.
Yeah, of course.
The project for me, when the songs were written at a very difficult time in my life, like probably the most difficult time in my entire life, and they were a scattered mess. And we sent them over to a couple producers, one that had worked with us previously and a couple other guys, and they kept getting back to me like, I'm not sure about these songs. And I'd go back to Mikey and be like, nobody seems to want to work on these songs. And Mikey was like, I got a guy who could work on these songs. And I was like, all right, let's see what happens. And we actually sent over what I had accomplished on Dope Sick, which is off the record. And he sent the final version back to me. And I was like, okay. Yeah. Okay. You know, like, and from that moment on, the clarity just came together because of Ray. He was like the gel for this entire project. Mikey and I are always bouncing ideas back and forth, but Ray took those ideas, which for me was the first time in writing. I've released over 10 records, and this was the first time in my life where I had to just kind of hand over my will to somebody and let them make sense of what I was doing, because I wasn't so finished with a song that I knew exactly what I wanted to do with it. And Mikey, frankly, was coming back to me like, I love this chorus. I love this, but like, what are we going to do with this? What are we going to do with that? And it was like, we just kind of hit a wall, you know, production wise. And when I flew out, I only worked in the same room with Ray and Mikey on this project for 3 or 4 days. Uh-huh. I flew out to LA, and what we got done in that amount of time was just insane, you know? And it's just to have those guys in the same room, and for us to be able to do that before this pandemic broke out was a special kind of thing for us, you know? So all of those things really led to like the finished product being what it is, you know? Definitely lucky to find a guy who kind of knew what to do with this stuff, you know?
Mm.
What's funny is this album was done pandemic style, but it was way before the pandemic started. Like it was all,
it's a matter. It was a matter of those guys lived in LA and I live in New Jersey.
Yeah.
So that's a 6-hour plane ride. And there's nothing we really couldn't have gotten done. I was working at a studio in Paramus, New Jersey, and those guys were working out, but Ray was working solo out by him. So Ray and Mikey would get together, do their stuff, send it back to me. Me and Ryan at the studio in Paramus would do our stuff. We'd send it back. We'd go, just went back and forth. But ultimately, Ray really just took everything and just made an amalgamation of flavors out of this whole thing that I didn't expect. I really didn't.
Yeah, he's a real. He's a musical genius.
Yeah, I couldn't see it. You know, couldn't see the through the tunnel, and he was huge.
Yeah, the moment with Ray for me is he took the song Alive, which for me Alive's one of, I think, one of the best songs Dave's ever written. I remember when you came to visit me at rehab, you had it in a tape player.
Wow.
I might have.
It was like a cassette. Yeah. You had it in a cassette recorder.
Yeah.
And you're like, listen to this. And I was like, Dave, that's the best song you've ever written. And I think, yeah, you left it with me because they had let me keep it and listen to it. And that song is the soundtrack to when I was at that facility, you know what I mean? Where I was just like, and it's funny because the message behind it is to be alive, you know what I mean?
And
be in the moment, be alive.
And the version that you have is is a sped up acoustic version. It's supposed to be a pop song.
I want to release that. I was listening to it in the car the other day. It was like, I want to release this demo of Alive, because I was like, it's just important to me. You know what I mean?
That's cool.
It was a cool piece of time. But anyway, we gave the bare bones demo to Ray, and a few days later Ray's like, check your email.
That's wow. hell of a turnaround.
And I'm like, cool. And I click it and I'm just like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, right. Expecting like, a shabby mix, and you come back and it's like, yeah, where did he get a choir from? He got a choir from somewhere in 2 days.
But I was just like, it was a complete reimagining of the song. And I had never thought of it that way. And it was very quiet and beautiful. And then it got big when it needed to get big. Super beautiful and touching. And I was just like, wow. And I think that song informed the rest of the album, because I was like, every song needs to make this jump. I was like, the jump from this demo to this recorded version, I was like, and I knew Ray would do that anyway. I didn't even need to be like, this needs to be, he's going to do that anyway. You know what I mean? Because it's what he does. But Alive informed the entire album, I think.
Yeah.
It set the bar. It was like, it's gotta hang. All these songs need to hang with this song.
Yeah, that's cool. Dave, did you have any reservations? Finally, handing over the producing, or you know,
I had 100% reservations. I had pretty much worked with the same two guys, D. James Goodwin and Ryan Ball, were my producers and engineers for my entire career. And I had never really worked with anyone else ever. So I had this massive reservation about stepping outside my comfort zone. But like I said,
totally warranted,
I gave the song Dope Sick over to Ray. And when it came back to me, I was like, oh, and I was sold. I was just like, if you could hear what it was originally, and then what he turned that into, or he turned Adeline into. Adeline was a major chord, like, I was going for this 50s thing. It was like, and just to hear what he came back with, I was like, yeah, I'm sold. This is our guy. I'm really happy to have him on the team, you know?
Yeah. It's funny. Like, you know, a lot of the graphic novel deals with memories of childhood, nostalgia, rose colored glasses of the past.
Yes.
Repressed memories.
Trauma.
And that's, I mean, yeah, trauma, but like the 80s for me, growing up in the, you know, the mid 80s was when I was probably super coherent, you know what I mean? So like all that stuff resonates with me, because I heard it at the doctor's office, I heard it at the supermarket, I heard it getting driven to school. heard it on MTV. You know, it was the background to everything I did in life at the time. So it's like there's a lot of emotional, and I know for Dave too, yeah, we're around the same ballpark in age, but there's a lot of emotional material that's placed on music from that era. You know, like, you know, New Wave was invading pop radio at the time. You know, you had, you know, The Cure, New Order, The Smiths, NXS, AHA, and it was on Z100 in New York, you know what I mean? And I would listen to it on the way to school. Yeah. Oh, Joe Jackson, Night and Day, Joe Jackson, which is, I think there's a emotional link between Electric Century and Joe Jackson. Did you ever pick up on that, Dave?
Man, I have not.
Subconsciously, I think there's some Genesis in there. I'm a Joe Jackson fan,
but I could see that.
There's Genesis in there. Phil Collins, Peter Gabriel, stuff from when we were. You know, we were sponges. Hmm.
Yeah, that's the vibe. That's the vibe I got when I've written it down by ear. I've got like 80s new wave, but also sounds perfectly of 2021.
That's I kind of in my head was like, what if you took this band and transported them in time to 2020 and gave them modern technology, and then you know a producer that had seen the past, you know, 30, 40 years of what had happened, and like, what would that sound like? You know, that was kind of like one of the ideas I had in my head where I was like, I want it to be 80, but I want it to not sound like an 80s album. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Well, that's the exact vibe I got from it.
And it's beautiful to see like you two just having discussions about it and finding out new things from your own backgrounds of this record as well, because as you said, it does sound that this is a huge passion project for you guys and that these songs mean so much that, yeah, there might be a story and a kind of concept behind it, but it comes from a personal place. And going back to like working with Ray and stuff, I'm sure that the trust, having someone like that on board and a different set of eyes, but know you can rely on him, and it's not just someone trying to come in from benefit from their own point of view and trying to push a chorus somewhere where it might not necessarily be the best for it, but it makes it a bit more catchy or whatever. So with Electric City, is there all that kind of, not only the trust between you two, but anyone you do work with having that connection as well?
Yeah, I mean, Dave, Sean, Simon, and Ray, three of my best friends in the world, you know, and they all worked on a piece of this project. I couldn't ask for something to work out that cool.
I've never made a record with my best friend before this project. Yeah. You know, I was always solo. So that was a lot of fun when you get along. A lot of
we don't fight.
We don't argue about anything. He'll be like, I really think we should try this, and maybe we rub a little bit sometimes. So I'll be like, nah, I want to keep it this way, and he's like, yeah, that's it. That's all.
You know,
it's normal,
you know what
shit.
It is? You know, this is where me and Dave clash is. Sometimes he hears something that's slightly more produced than he's used to, and he gets scared of it. That's what it is. you'll hear something, and you're like, you know what I mean? You're not used to going in that wheelhouse.
Yeah, it's true.
I go to it from time to time when I do stuff where I'm like, I just want it to be. And it's like, that's the only time that sometimes you're like, we call it demo-itis.
Yes.
You're like, I don't like that. You're like,
we got
like,
demo-itis.
I don't like that version.
Hard.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes, man.
It would happen to me in MCR, you know, like we had these demo versions and then we record. And we're like, we can't beat that version. Like, everyone does it, you know what I mean? And with this, you know, some of the stuff Dave was attached to the versions he did, you know what I mean? And it's like, but it was cool that you trusted me. You know, I think we got to where we wanted to be.
Yeah. It's lovely to hear you guys talk so openly about this as well. But we've mentioned the words concept quite a few times. And I think it's safe to say that both individually in your careers, a lot of fans would kind of regard you guys of having that big history with concept records, with your different projects from Sleep Station to My Chem and everything. But like, in that regard now, is something like that just second nature to you, that you don't think about it too much, that, oh, it's another concept record and the story, that is just kind of... You get more excited about doing records like this where you can incorporate your own personal feelings, but you're not just writing a song about a girl who broke my heart or blah, blah, and A, Y, and B. It's a whole collection of everything combined.
I mean, I took on the role of seeing this record through the eyes of somebody who had an opioid addiction, who was an alcoholic, an addict of all types and stripes and shades. And I got a lot of inspiration from that, from a friend of mine who's in recovery, and he speaks openly to me about it and the work that he's doing with helping other people. And I had a lot of questions for him. And there's moments where all of those things really played a part in what I was writing, you know, but really it was me that I was writing about, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Really those things were internally going on for me. When you get to the end of the record, we didn't plan it to be that way, but I noticed that there was a few songs at the end of the record that kind of started to show the light at the end of the tunnel for me. And I believe that adding them right where they were at the end of the record really goes from a part in the record where, like, I begin the record by saying, today I feel like dying, to it's free to be okay, you know? And that was just kind of a natural thing when we were sequencing the record to put it together like that. But at no point in time did I write the record to go from here to here to here to here to here. Just, that's how my life was unfolding.
Yeah,
you know, and that's how it unfolds on the record, you know.
Yeah, so that's super interesting, because I would have thought like you would have had it all planned out and storyboarded and all that way. But
I wish that's awesome. Got to come from up here. It's got to come from your heart. It's got to come from your heart. Yeah.
For me, it's like I only know how to do stuff that's veiled in fiction, really. Especially music. I mean, I can't think of anything I've done that's really not a concept, or like there's a world around it, or it's how I was taught too, you know, like in MCR, that's what, you know, that was our wheelhouse, you know, it's what we love and it's what we did, you know, we did it really well. And with this, it was like, it's instinctively, it's muscle memory. That's where, you know, with Electric Century, it's like, that's where I go to the fiction, you know? I mean, I think I'm kind of a daydreamer too. Sometimes they're in everyday life. I'm living in fiction sometimes in my brain, you know, like everyone does it.
Yeah.
You fantasize, you daydream, you run through things, and it's like, it's just natural for me. And I know Dave, you know, you have 9 concept albums, I think.
Something like that. I don't remember. I put out a record last year with Sleep Station. It was my first Sleep Station record in like 12 years or something like that. And the music was so not Electric Century that it was refreshing to go to it, because when I write with Electric Century in mind, I write with a feeling I have. And the feeling was the one Mikey expressed about growing up in the 80s. I go to that feeling that I had. There was a lot of trauma for me then. There was a lot of joy for me then. There was a lot of exploration for me then. There was a lot of these great things that happened. And these songs were the soundtrack of my life. So I go to that place and focus on it inside, on how I was feeling during that, how that music made me feel. And then I internalize that and then write accordingly. And that's something that I usually do when I'm doing a concept record, is I really get into the vibe of it before I start to write, almost kind of like an actor who's doing method acting. That's how I dove into it. So you could see how, like, you know, both records I did were completely, you know, miles apart musically, because when I sat down to do it, 2 different headspaces, you know? And I know what Mikey would like from this project, and I know what he doesn't like. So there's plenty. He gets bombarded with
lots of content. Yeah, lots of
content. but I'm specifically picking them out because I think he might like it.
You know what you'll know what to send to me. But for me, it's like you know, I've said this a billion trillion times in tons of interviews, but like, my favorite stuff was concept oriented, you know, like all David Bowie's career, you know what I mean? Like Smashing Pumpkins, Radiohead, you know, it's just like fictional worlds, you know?
Yeah.
And there's dystopian landscapes.
And there's a lot of tough cuts on this record. I noticed, I went back yesterday and I was listening to some of the songs that didn't make it on the record that were conceptualized like this. And I thought, wow, we had to make some really tough choices to make this cohesive, you know?
I'm glad Voices got on there, because That was supposed to be on For the Night to Control. What's funny about For the Night to Control is I feel like it is a concept album, but we never dug into it. I feel like it definitely tells a story that is personal to me and Dave. That we don't have to talk about it. People, you know, people pull their own meanings from things, but I know what the album's about and it's a concept, and you know, the album cover even speaks of the concept, and we just never dug in. You know what I mean? We
didn't have an opportunity to dig in as much as we have now.
Yeah, we didn't. And yeah, as far as the graphic novel goes, it's basically, it tells a lot about Atlantic City, New Jersey. It takes place primarily in this guy's brain in Atlantic City, New Jersey, but that's a place where me and my brother and my family spent a lot of time in the late 80s, early 90s. And it was kind of this neon, seedy neon. Dave, you spent tons of time in Atlantic City. But
more than I want to remember.
Yeah. Atlantic City was basically a place where they were trying to make it into Disneyland, but it wasn't. You know what I mean? They were trying to make it like a family theme park, but it was seedy and dangerous. But yeah, me and my brother had an awesome time just like walking on the boardwalk as teenagers and just like hanging out, growing up, talking. You know, there was lots of arcades there, I remember.
For me, I grew up going down to Wildwood Crest. So that's a couple hours less, but it's got the biggest boardwalk in the world.
Same thing.
I also spent time in Atlantic City, Asbury Park, some of the different areas and stuff like that. And for me, the happiest place I could possibly be is on the boards on the beach.
It's comfort. Yeah, it's comfort.
It's comfort. So when I saw this graphic novel and stuff like that, and then combined with the music that we were doing, it was just like a flood of stuff, just like washing over me.
Yeah.
Emotional about it.
Yeah,
the book is fantastic.
That's the thing. It's like, yeah, I'm glad you dug it, you know, because you took a tremendous leap of faith. I was like, I got it. Like, I know what it's about. I got it. But yeah, it's like the whole concept of the story kind of plays into, do you think that the past was better? Because you're probably wrong. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you've waited so long to get here and now, and you're like, oh man, the good old days. It's like, maybe it wasn't that great. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that seems to be like an overall topic about everything that's going on in the world as well at the moment. It's like, if you look at all politics or all the leaders of the moment are like, remember when things were good? And then you're like, well, were they? Were they good?
maybe they're just as good now. But no, I mean, like, that was a great coming of age for me and my brother was Atlantic City when we were kids. Yeah. And I know it was great, but I often think to myself, like, the idea of the whole story came in my head where I was like, if you were to take me currently and shoot me back to 1987 in Atlantic City and have me wander around, what would I think? You know what I mean? I don't know. You know, that's kind of where it came from. And it also came from, I had tried hypnotherapy when I got out of rehab.
Oh, wow.
And immediately after I did it, I was like, that was terrifying. And I was like, I would love to write a horror story about that. That's basically, that was like, that was the beginning, the kernel of the idea after I, you know, after I got out of that session. I was like,
I did not know. Like, I had no clue.
I tried hypnotherapy. It was terrifying, dude. Terrifying. Oof. You know,
I can imagine.
It was fun.
I'll never go there.
It was fun. It was strange. Yeah, it was strange. But that's, yeah, the kernel of the idea came from that. And I tucked that idea away for years and years and years. And then, like, yeah, when after that call with Z2, I was like, I knew, like, the idea shot in my brain where I was like, because I wanted this to be about New Jersey, you know? My youth is entrenched in Atlantic City. Yeah, also, like, we spent time in, like, Wildwood, Seaside as kids. But yeah, Atlantic City was a big one. It was a big one for us. I know is there anything left there now? I haven't been there in like 20 years.
I went there pre-pandemic and they knocked the Trump Tower down. That's been sitting there empty.
There's a shame.
Yeah.
Real, not a shame.
Real kind of like symbolic of everything that's been going on for the last 4 years. They finally just leveled the fucking place.
Nice. Good.
And it's a mess. They built a mall that didn't work. So Atlantic City is always, you could just reference Bruce Springsteen, Atlantic City, and that'll tell you everything you need to know about Atlantic City.
Wow. Yeah, they were in the 80s and 90s, they were basically, it was like a square peg in a circle. They were like, no, this is for families. No, look, there's animatronic characters everywhere. Like, you really have to come. And it was like, they were trying really hard. I remember it was like every casino had like a mini theme park, but Atlantic City, it was a seedy place. You know what I mean? It was dodgy.
It was dark.
I was always fascinated with them trying to make it that, like, you know, make it something it wasn't. I was always fascinated with that concept.
Yeah. But speaking of the New Jersey references as well, because I noticed there's a lot of homage in everything connected with it to your hometowns. And one thing I wanted to talk about is, as a music fan growing up from the other side of the world in the UK and Wales, over the years, there's been so much of a heritage musically from that place. If it was being from yourselves, like Mike Hemmings' Sleep Station, to bands like Thursday and the Gaslight Anthem, to Bon Jovi and Bruce Springsteen, there seems to be something magic in the water, whatever genre it is. I was just wondering, like, if you have any memories of like when you first got that like love of music from your hometown, or like what about New Jersey gives that influence to so many massive acts?
Let me just say the remainder of this time, Dave can talk about Bruce Springsteen if you gave him the opportunity. I will say Bon Jovi, Bruce Springsteen were the soundtrack of New Jersey in the 80s. They were treasures to everyone that lived there, and it was a battle cry for you, you know, born in the USA, slippery when wet. Yeah. It was like, you listen to those two. I mean, my brother's first big concert was Bruce Springsteen at Giant Stadium, you know? And it's like, I wanted to go, but it was like, I remember, my dad got two tickets and I was really young. So, you know, I was too young to go. My brother went, and I remember he came home and just like listening, like it felt like he had gone on like a religious excursion. You know what I mean? Like, you saw Bruce Springsteen. He was in person in front of you, you know, like the concept he seemed mythical, you know what I mean?
And to your question, like, what is it about this place? There are different regions of Jersey. You got the north, where you're a suburb of New York City. So everybody, you can meet people from all different types of ethnicities and religions and eat their food. And we're all busy and on top of each other. So there's a lot of stimulation in that aspect that you don't get from my experience of traveling the country as much as you do in that kind of microcosm, that area. And then once you hit the shore, back in the day, bands played from up north Jersey and would tour on the weekend all the way down to Seaside Heights or Asbury Park or wherever, and they travel back. So the shore itself kind of got this really cool music vibe. Like, if you go to Asbury Park, it's a total scene down there, and it's like a lot of great like rock bands come from that area, and it's just like it's a scene, you know. The punk scene down there is insane. You know, it's so thriving, and you're inspired by all of these different sections where people are doing different things, you know. Getting on this, Bruce Springsteen was part of that thing where he, you know, traveled on the weekends all the way down the shore and played up and back and up and back. And I just can only imagine all the great bar bands, like, you know, that came out of that period of time, walking into a club in Asbury Park and you're in the Stone Pony and it only seats like, what, I don't know, stands like what, 300 people. And then suddenly you're standing there seeing that. That's cool. The town itself, it takes that in, you know? And it's kind of part of the environment. I mean, you can't go anywhere now on the Asbury Park boardwalk and not see a Bruce Springsteen shirt or saying or record for sale or people playing it on the boardwalk. It's part of your history. It's part of your environment, is my point.
Hmm.
Yeah. Awesome. What were you going to say, Mikey?
I didn't want to forget. I saw the Strokes at the Stone Pony with your brother.
That's right. You did.
I was like, I don't want to.
Right before they started. That's right.
It was when he ran Makeout Club, and we went because he got tickets, and I remember going, and it was like the Strokes had just started to get big, but like, yeah, we got to see him at the Stone Pony.
Yeah.
Did you? I'll never forget that show.
Was that a reference to makeoutclub.com?
Yeah. His brother like was one of the, he's one of the founders, right?
Yeah. And I helped as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I used to.
You did too. Yeah.
I used to have a profile on there as well. That's nuts.
Of course you did.
Of course I did.
One thing about Asbury Park for me is that every time My Chemical Romance kind of went to a different league, we were kind of christened at the convention center. I think like when we were a local band, we filled up that side room in the convention center and everybody was like, that was a moment for us. And then I remember we headlined the main room at the convention center and then we headlined the beach. Like every time My Chem went to a bigger level, Asbury Park, we were on the bigger stage every time. But man, to be, you know, I think back to, you know, like one of the coolest times in my life was the early 2000s in New Jersey going to shows. The world was watching New Jersey. You know what I mean? Like you had Midtown Saves the Day Thursday. You had all these national acts that went and went to all the Wayne Firehouse shows, you know, because the promoters there, Bomb Shelter, like they knew they had lots of connections. So they were able to get bands that had no business playing a VFW hall to play. Like I saw Jimmy Eat World at the Drive-In. So many huge acts, you know, Jets of Brazil, Hot Rod Circuit, Newfound Glory, Get Up Kids, like they all played the Wayne Firehouse, but like the big guns in New Jersey at the time, Thursday Saves the Day Midtown, you know what I mean? We were all inspired by what was happening in that.
Were Lifetime finished by then?
They were finished, but they were legends at the time. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like everybody was like, oh my God, like Lifetime, like, they were such a big deal. That's another thing. There's a lot of Jersey pride for Lifetime, but there was this stuff that came after Lifetime that like started to get big, really big in New Jersey, like Saves the Day and Thursday could sell out the Firehouse in a second. You know what I mean? And then when the Firehouse got capped because people realized how many people they were fitting in the room, they had to do it by the books and they took it to this place called Chrome. Do you remember Chrome, Dave?
Mm, yes.
So that became the new like Wayne Firehouse. It was Chrome. And yeah, like everybody kind of got graduated to that room and, you know, went on to national spotlights, you know, like Dashboard Confessional, all those Jersey bands I mentioned, you know, Newfound Glory, like Jimmy Eat World at the Drive-In, like they played that scene. And it was like, you knew everyone from every, we all went to every show. So we knew everybody and there's a great community. But like, yeah, every A&R guy in the world was kind of scoping out New Jersey. They all wanted, they were like, well, we got Thursday. What's next? You know what I mean? We got Midtown. What's next? We got Saves the Day. They were combing, you know, there was A&R guys at VFW halls with 10 people. You know what I mean? Like they were trying to find that next thing. So it was really cool. And I'll always fondly remember that time in music there.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, yeah, I thought you were going to say the same thing as the reason I would have given for the South Wales scene doing so well, which was...
Yeah, I remember it with you.
Yeah, which is that we all wanted to get the fuck out of it. We all just wanted to leave South Wales. But yours is so romantic. Yours is so romantic and beautiful about New Jersey. And there's me just like, I just want to get out of this fucking hellhole.
The most famous line about New Jersey is that it will rip the bones from your back. You know, like Springsteen says, you know? That it is a place where you do want to flee, but you somehow want to come back. You know, there's a magic to it. I mean, Mikey's been gone forever.
Last time I visited New Jersey was, I mean, I went for a funeral, like maybe like 4 years ago, but prior to that, it's been a very, very long time. But no, I have a soft spot for New Jersey. You know, I'll always have a soft spot for New Jersey. There's memories attached to almost everything, you know, almost anything there will shoot me back somewhere. You know what I mean? Especially like, you know, like what exit are you on the highway, on the parkway? You know what I mean? Like yeah. I was 148 as a kid, you know,
mm-hmm.
Stuff like that's really cool. Yeah. It was Amazing. I mean, Dave still lives there, but yeah, amazing place.
Yeah.
No, I just remember as being a kid, you know, obviously from the other side of the world, just finding all these bands for the first time and be like, is everyone just from New Jersey? Because at one point it was just that kind of.
Yeah, it was funny. Like this after Thursday Saves the Day, Midtown, the next wave was like us and Senses Fail, Armor for Sleep. Like there was that was like the new crop of Jersey bands, and we would all play shows and tour. You know, we were all the baby bands at the time. We were all duking it out for that 1 of 4 slot. You know what I mean? Yeah. We're all like, we just want to get on a national tour. You know what I mean? And it was like us and Senses Fail spent so much time in those early days together. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's cool. Like time flies, man. Yo, time flies, man. It really does.
It certainly does. But yeah, like we mentioned the graphic novel now. Like after listening to, I've listened to the album twice today. Have you thought about doing, I don't know, like a cartoon, a movie, a musical even?
Ooh.
Of potentially.
I've heard rumblings of animation.
Nice.
Ooh.
I don't want to ruin there's things being planned. I don't want to ruin any of it, but I mean, it lends itself to that.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
That type of thing, you know, it's a neon fantasy landscape. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, we have a couple of visual ideas for songs and things like that, that we're working on right now that
we have stuff coming. We have stuff coming for sure.
Yeah. It's going to be exciting. It's not like for the Knights of Control, we kind of put that record out. We did some press and we did a bunch of things, but we never, it wasn't a long haul for us, you know? And no, I feel like in this record,
we did wacky shit.
Yeah, we did wacky shit. But I mean, I feel like this is going to be like, you know, a nice progression for us. We're going to release things in the future that are really cool and, you know, really work the record for a year or two, you know?
For the Knights of Control, I've told this story before, but what I was trying to do with that is I was trying to make people have to get the CD and listen to it. You know what I mean? Like I wanted them to hunt out a CD player and put it in, and that's when we gave it away with Kerrang. You know, I was like, that was the thought I had in my head, where I was like, I want somebody to find this dead technology, and that's how I want them to be. You know, you got to go get the physical. You know what I mean? I wanted to kind of give people a moment where you're enjoying physical media.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And going back to those early days and the inspirations and everything, I mean, one thing we do like to talk about on the podcast is not only find out people's stories, but just have a moment from them that where they couldn't believe that they'd gotten this far, or something that they've just been blown away by in their careers. If it was kind of meeting a musical hero or just getting to do something that they never thought they would. I was wondering if the two of you could maybe share anything like that that comes to mind when looking back over your individual careers.
Wow. Like, Mikey, I was there. I was there at that Reading, right? I was literally.
That's where I was going.
Yeah. Go on. I'll let you both do it, and I'll tell you my side of that story.
Okay. So, as a teenager, I mean, I think when I was about 13 or 14, I discovered Enemy magazine. I was entrenched in Britpop, you know, obsessed with Blur and Oasis and stuff to that, in that vein. But what I was always fascinated by was the festival posters in the back of the magazines. You know, I would have done anything to go to these festivals because they were all my favorite bands, and they never came to America. You know what I mean? They never came to America. And specifically Reading and Leeds, the big yellow poster, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and I had met a friend who had a friend that I still am really close with. His name's John. And he would kind of mail me mixtapes and t-shirts from overseas, you know, cause he knew I was big into British music, but he would go to these festivals and he'd be like, you know, he would email me and he'd be like, oh, do you want a Muse t-shirt? Do you want a Travis t-shirt? You know what I mean? Like
Travis,
I would always
it's been a while since I've heard the name Travis.
It's weird how I'm not going to say they're forgotten cause that's false, but I feel like they should.
Oh, they had
very underrated.
Yeah, they had some massive songs. Yeah, absolutely.
Why does it always rain on me?
It just came out with a song last year called Nina's Song.
I love that band.
And I remember it was the only song in maybe, I couldn't even tell you where I literally had to pull the car over because I had like started getting verklempt. And I was listening to it and I was like, man, this guy can pen a tune, you know? What's crazy is how much they, you know, you're talking about New Jersey, and Mikey and I can't understand what's in the water by you guys.
Yeah, for real.
All our favorite bands come from your neighborhood.
What's very interesting about Travis is they brought Coldplay over.
Oh,
that's nuts.
But the first time I heard Coldplay was opening for Travis at Irving Plaza. You know what I mean? Like,
it's the first time I ever heard of Coldplay.
Yeah, I was like, who's this band? I remember it was like you had to go to Virgin Megastore and pay $40 for the CD because it wasn't out in America. And I remember Parachutes, you know, and Enemy was all on it. And they were like, this is the thing, you know what I mean? And I remember that's how I heard Coldplay. But anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. The Reading and Leeds poster in the back, I would fantasize about it. All my favorite bands were really big on the top. And I would have, you know, there was 20 bands I wanted to see on each lineup. Fantasize. And in my head, I was like, that's a bucket list for me, is I want to close that thing. You know what I mean? I was like, I want our name to be at the very top. Like I want to play at nighttime in front of that ocean of people. You know what I mean? Cause to me, that was for my musical journey. That was the most important. That was the Holy Land for me. You know what I mean? So I was like, I want to close Reading and Leeds. You know what I mean? So we were able very, you know, fortunate to be able to have that moment. 2011?
Yeah, 10 years ago.
We had a great history with that festival, though. You know, we scrapped it out on the side stage, and like we played them both in one day, I remember, because we had to do the VMAs. So we had to play Reading and Leeds the same day. That was that the second time we played? I can't remember. Somebody will be able to fact check me, but and then I remember we played with Pearl Jam and Placebo that year.
You did?
And I watched Indian Style on the side of the stage.
Oh, wow.
I was sitting there and Eddie Vedder was 5 feet from me and I was just like, you know what I mean? They let me sit on the stage, which is still one of my favorite moments. But yeah, closing Reading and Leeds is one of those moments where, you know, I don't even remember the first couple minutes. The adrenaline does something different to your brain. You know what I mean? It's like you go in the fight or flight and your hands get numb and your body gets numb. It's like this out of body experience. But yeah, that's for me, that was a moment I'll never forget. You know, getting to see that poster with our name on it, getting to perform in front of all those people.
Yeah. But saying that, you didn't just close Reading and Leeds. You had Brian May from Queen come out and perform with you. So that's
the thing is, Morgan, he's forgotten about that because that obviously happens all the time to everybody, doesn't it? Yeah. I am sick of Brian May turning up going, Sean, can I play a gig with you? Fuck off, Brian. Will you leave it? You've played with him. No, I remember. Here's my quick, brief version of that. The Blackout were also on the main stage that day. I think we were second on, and obviously you guys were headlining. And we turned up early because we heard that you guys were actually sound checking yourselves. And we were like, that's strange. Like, the headline band normally just gets their crew to do it and they don't turn up. So we were like, there must be something going on here. So we turned up early and like we managed to get, like, we were side the stage and luckily enough, I think security remembered us from when we'd played shows with you.
Mm-hmm.
And we were told to just stand there and just wait there. And I remember seeing you everybody in the band was just like, just check in and just looked super happy. And I was like, this is half past 8 a.m. There's something wrong here. They shouldn't be this happy. And then all of a sudden I turn around, right? There's Brian May. Brian May's just walking up with a jacket on. He literally just tips his jacket off to his guy behind him who catches it. And we're all like, what the fuck? That's Brian May. This is insane. And you're all beaming. And I was like, I can't get over this. And then next minute, Brian May turns around and looks directly at me and my friends. Looks like he's looking past as the guitarist from my band is walking up. And he waves. And I was like, does Bob from our band know Brian May, but he's never, ever told us? That would be insane. And I just remember...
That's really funny.
Yeah, Brian May was the only person I've ever... kind of been starstruck by, and I forgot to be able to pronounce my name to him. He was like, oh, hi, I'm Brian. And I went, and he just walked off, and I went, oh, I forgot how to pronounce my name to a man.
What a legend, you know? I don't think I've met a nicer person in music. I think if I had to make a list, I think he's number one as nicest. He hung out in our backstage room with us and like the whole night, you know what I mean? Like trying to psych us up. We were all scared. You know what I mean? We'd never played something like that. So it was like, he was giving us pep talks all day. You know, you guys got this, you know, you got it, you know, like he was very supportive, but like, I remember like, we were just like, do whatever you want. You know, he listened to the song. We're like, do whatever you want. He was just like, he's got the little, you know, he's got these coins that he plays with. All that stuff you hear, all the legends and stuff. He's got his own currency that he plays with, you know what I mean? As a pick.
Wow.
But I remember like, yeah, we left for Encore and we came out and like the drum beat started and the laser lights shot up. And I was just like, it was cool. You know what I mean? I'll never forget that. I still like once a year I'll put on Reading and Leeds on YouTube. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So will I.
And I'll be like, yeah, once a year I'll watch like clips of it or I'll, you know, sometimes like I'll put on clips of MCR concerts for my daughter.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
And that's one I'll put on. I'll be like, check this out. You know what I mean? I'm like, look at that. And she's just like, so it's cool to see it through her eyes.
Nice. Yeah, that's cool. David, have you got any moments where you've, Freddie Mercury.
The craziest thing for me is actually I got a small, really shitty, really dirty rehearsal space in Passaic, New Jersey, in this old turn of the century warehouse. And I shared the room with Pensy Prep. And eventually a band called My Chemical Romance formed and they took over the rehearsal space with us. So we had it half the day. They had it half the day. And I met Gerard. I met Mikey. And I watched those guys from your second show. And there was no one there.
You played our second show. Yeah. You played our second
and there was
show.
No one there.
No one.
And I continued to play shows with them and they continued to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And it gave me a realization too. Like at the time in my career, I was like, wow, I have no scene, you know, there's no scene for what I'm doing. So I can't latch into the scene and bring my music to it and kind of have that, you know, develop and grow within it. But watching My Chem, there was a scene for this. There was hungry for this music. You know, and I watched them go from playing skate parks with me and
where nobody was there. Where nobody was there.
Yeah. And I watched them rehearse. We filmed your first video. My brother directed your first video. My other brother's in the video. It all took place in our rehearsal room that we shared in Passaic, New Jersey. And then I think the biggest aha moment for me was one day I'm at Madison Square Garden. And I was on the train and this woman, young girl was there and I could tell she was probably going to the show. And I was like, are you going to the show? She was like, yeah. And we got to talking and I was like, they're my friends. And I told everybody, I was like, I'm going to see my friends. They're playing Madison Square Garden, you know? And it's so for me to watch this band go from, you know, hustling, because nobody hustled like they did. That's a fact. I've never seen anybody hustle as hard as they did.
Thank you.
And to watch them go from that to sitting back, watching them at Madison Square Garden was probably one of the coolest things I've experienced.
One of the cool things for me is Madison Square Garden was kind of where I got the idea that I wanted to be in a band. Me and my brother had gone to see the Smashing Pumpkins there during the Melancholy Tour. And I'd seen them the night previous and I'm like, Gerard, you have to come with me because he was busy going to school and working full time. So he was tired of, you know, he last thing he wanted to do that night was go to a show. You know what I mean? He was like, oh, I'm beat. I've been going to school. But I was like, trust me, you're going to want to go to this. Like I saw them last night. It changed my life. I want you to see it. You know? So we went and we saw, it was like mid September, 1996. Yeah. Like we were watching them play. And I could tell he was as blown away as I was, you know, the night previous and currently. And And I just nudged him. I'm like, this is what I want to do for a living. And he was like, you know, I was like, this is what we're going to do for a living. He's like, you're right. You know what I mean? I was like,
awesome.
It's like, this is, yeah, I was just like, that was like the big bang moment for me was Madison Square Garden, where I was like, this is just all of it. You know, the big deal, the lights, the theatrics, the whole crowd.
Think how many bands, right, and people and stuff that has come out, like, from your band, from you in that moment, thinking, oh, I want to do this now, right? Like, you changed my band's trajectory. You completely changed my band's trajectory. So imagine how many bands you've inspired and stuff. It's all come from that moment. It's fucking super cool.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
That's the thing. I'm starting to meet people now who, you know, I'm watching these younger bands and they're huge. And they're like, I did this because of your band. You know what I mean? And I'm watching, it's the circle of life. Mm. You know what I mean?
I saw you guys when they came back and they did the show in LA. I was there. I was with my daughter.
Oh,
I was
with Ryan now.
Yeah, I was with my daughter who was very sick. We believe she probably had COVID at the time. We didn't know it. She's a huge MCR fan. So I had a jet after the show and I couldn't hang out behind stage. But who was there? Phoebe Bridgers was there. Huge fan. The guys from the 1975 are there. Huge fans. I mean, these are people I'm looking up to right now as like being as good as it gets as in the moment artists. And they grew up on these guys. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Wild. Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's really wild.
Yeah, but I think that's part of it. It's like, because we kind of, like my old band, like when we were doing okay in the UK scene or whatever, like we kind of, you guys like came up just before us and then like there's a part of me then that was like, we were ever on the same level. We were never on the same level, right? But
it was fun. But it was so fun.
Like you guys came up and I literally just watched you guys fucking grow and blow it away. And from the get-go, I think the first time I met you guys was probably in 2004, I think. From day one, you guys were absolutely the nicest guys. And there was never any change in anyone. And I didn't see... Yeah, I didn't see anybody becoming a dick or any of that. So,
they're the same guys that were in the rehearsal room in Passaic, New Jersey. There's really no difference from the just really no difference. It's like literally the same Mikey I knew then. There hasn't been 1 ounce of a change from your fame. I hope you know that.
Thank you. No, but I mean, we always did our best to, I mean, it honestly came natural to us, luckily, but we always wanted to stay humble. You know what I mean?
Mm.
We're not better than anyone else.
Well, yeah, you guys made us.
Maybe we're, yeah.
You made us be better people because after we did that run with you in the UK, we literally finished that day and flew to Australia the next day. And we got to our gig in Sydney and you guys had sent us bottles of champagne and we were like, what the fuck is this? Like, we'd never ever experienced anybody doing anything like that. So we were like, surely they've sent this to the wrong people. They didn't need to come to us. Surely this is fucking mental. But like, it literally made us, because like we were just getting slightly, well, I was probably getting slightly too big for my boots. But then that moment happened and I went, well, if they can take the time to send us them, I should be nicer. So yeah, it's mad how much influence you guys have had on everything that's happening. So
but
both of you, like Dave with Sleep Station and stuff as well, like it's all been it's influential and
it's all the ripple effect.
Yeah, from everybody who listens to music, thank you guys.
Yeah.
Because honestly, you have fucking done so much for our world. And I probably wouldn't have this podcast. I wouldn't have this podcast now, I don't think, if it wasn't for you guys. So,
thanks, guys.
Thank you very much.
I think one of the craziest things about what you guys were just talking about is my two heroes are Bruce Springsteen and Brian Wilson. And I had an opportunity to meet both guys in a personal setting. And a friend of mine called me up and said, do you want to come with me? I'm going to work out with Bruce today and we're going to hang out. And, you know, and I was like, no. I was like, I actually don't want to meet that guy.
Yeah, I don't want to ruin it.
I don't want to ruin it. And I could have paid a couple extra bucks to go see Brian when he performed. He did the Pet Sounds tour recently, a few years ago. And it was the same thing. I was like, I don't want to I just don't want to meet this guy and ruin my perception of what I think he is, because he's up here, you know? And if I brought him down here, it would just kill my life.
Yeah, that's true. But I guess I've said a couple of times on this podcast, I've been lucky enough that I've probably met the majority of my musical heroes now, and I've been quite lucky they've all been nice. There hasn't been a major dick, which I guess I'm probably a little bit sad about as well. Cause
rock and roll and all that, really, you think?
I remember a story of the bassist from Gallows saw Kerry King at Slayer and went up to him and was like, "Hi, Kerry King." And Kerry King said, "Out of my way, pussy." And I was like, that's the response I want from someone, just one person. I don't know who it is, but it'd probably help if they're in some extreme metal band as well.
Yeah. You guys should meet Ryan Adams one day.
What's interesting is I had a similar, like, Liam Gallagher is one of my heroes. And I was always like, I don't want to meet a man like Oasis is too important to me. And the press makes him look like he's this and that. And honestly, if I had a list of nicest people in music, I had Brian May at number one, Liam Gallagher's number two.
Wow, you've ruined his credit now. You've ruined his street cred.
You are shattering entire universes right now.
he gave me one of my favorite moments ever. Like, I remember I remember BDI was on a festival tour that we were on, and I was waiting at the ticket counter for something. And one of our security dudes, Matty, was like, taps me on the shoulder and he's pointing behind him. And I turn around, Liam Gallagher standing there.
Wow.
And he looks at me and he goes, and I'm just like, you know, he gave me like a head nod. And then I'm like, what do I do? And then we just started talking, you know, he's like, my son loves you guys. He's like, I love that song, Na Na. And he was going like this, I remember. And he's like, and I was like, dude, I got to tell him, I was like, you're one of my heroes. You know what I mean? And we had a cool moment and I sat near him on the plane. That was one of those times where I was like, I don't want to meet my hero. And it was like, I was like pleasantly surprised.
I have tremendous regrets.
How good would Liam Gallagher be singing Na 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 though? His voice would be perfect.
We thought about it.
That's perfect.
Imagine if Oasis got back together, what would happen?
Oh, there'd be chaos.
Is there a venue big enough to house that show?
They'd have to do multiple stadiums or fields over here, I think. I think it would be like...
A month.
Yeah.
A month at Wembley.
Literally, like the Michael Jackson residency he had before he passed away. They'd have to do like 50 nights in Wembley Stadium or something.
I'd imagine they'd probably try and recreate Nebworth again and just do loads of Nebworths.
That's true.
Really.
Yeah, they're bigger, to me, that would be the biggest reunion that's possible, I think, currently.
What's crazy is,
in my mind,
I've seen how, like, my son, you know, and his band and all these young kids are just getting into Oasis like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When it's that good, it's when it's that good, back, it carries,
like,
you know?
Even though it never really went good. Away, you know, it's crazy.
They're timeless. That's why Oasis is timeless. It's anyone from any era can appreciate what they did.
Yeah, that's true.
I also think with Liam's kind of like brash character, like, he probably fits in quite well right now with kind of what the kids are going to want growing up. Because if you look at like everything that's popular now, like 6ix9ine and Cardi B and all that stuff, it's all like massive bombastic personalities. And when you think about it, Liam Gallagher is literally the king of potentially being a dickhead to everybody. So I think that's what people are probably finding and liking about him, is his confidence and swagger, I guess.
And it's funny because the stuff that he tweets is just brilliant. And you know he doesn't think twice. You know, he just types it and sends it. You know that. You know Liam's not looking at his Twitter going,
should I? Yeah.
You know he goes,
yeah, there's
and
nothing.
He doesn't think twice.
Yeah, there's nothing in Liam's drafts whatsoever because it's all out there. It's just straight out there.
That's his stream of conscious, and he's brilliant, you know?
Yeah. He tweeted the other day about the royal family saying, I don't think families should be airing out their arguments. And I was like, I don't know if he's serious. Like, I literally was like, he's got to realise he's been a massive, like, has he done that as a joke? I just can't work it out, because you never know with him. I can't tell.
You never know.
Yeah, I can't tell if he's genius level trolling, or sometimes...
You never know.
Or sometimes he's just fucking mental and throws things out there.
Yeah, that's true, man.
It's a little from column A, a little from column B.
Definitely. Well, but guys, yeah, this conversation is being absolutely wonderful. Just one more question before you go. Obviously, now with the album being now, you've said that there might be a little bit of animation stuff to look forward to, but is there anything else we can expect from Electric Century coming up? Is there anything we should be keeping an eye out for?
Yeah, I mean, we have stuff coming. It's just like we don't want to kind of spoil some of the fun that we have. So just stay tuned. You know, stay tuned to the, like, we have some social media accounts. You know, there's the Instagram, there's the Twitter. We kind of communicate through that mostly, and, you know, my personal and Dave's personal. You know, just keep your eyes peeled to those, and we got some fun stuff planned. But yeah, we're gonna push this album for, you know, this isn't a traditional album cycle, so we're just gonna keep going with it. You know, we're just gonna just have fun with it. That's what we're going to do.
I'm having a blast.
Nice.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I really, really hope that you guys get to bring it over here and, yeah, play some shows over here. And I would
love that, yeah.
We would love to do one of these in the flesh as well, yes, if possible. Yes, so that would be fantastic. So,
thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you guys so much. This is awesome.
It's been absolutely a pleasure. Thank you guys
for the honesty, for the music, and for the inspiration over the years. Honestly, it doesn't go unnoticed, so please don't think it does. You guys are fucking superstars.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you. And Morgan, nice to meet you, Morgan.
You too. Nice to meet you both.
I'd like to say before getting off that I listened to your podcast.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And there was a moment there. He said Chris Carrabba was like at least the top three best looking guy to come on the show. I would like to present Mikey Way, maybe top five.
Chris, nice. Yeah.
Chris is a sharp looking guy, isn't he? I love the beard he has. I think it works really well. Like, I told him recently, I questioned him
about that, because
where does it come from?
He literally went from bald faced child to bare-faced man. And
I told him recently, I was like, what you got going on right now? I was like, lean in, because it's amazing, you know? Like, I love that beard. It's super good.
It is. I had to ask him if there were any photos of him with a patchy beard, because I'm 37.
I'm 37, don't worry.
It grows there and nowhere here, right?
I'm the same way.
So I was like, Chris, there's no photos of you, like, in between. One day you didn't have a beard and next day you had a beard. How is this? And he was like, I shave 3 times a day. And I was like, the world's hairiest man.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you for checking it out, Dave. That really means the world to us.
Thank you guys for everything.
No, thank you so much, guys.
And let's speak soon. You're
listening to Sapping Podcast. Yes,
absolutely fantastic chat. Yes, thank you very much to Mikey and David for giving us your time. It was so fucking good to reconnect with Mikey, and I cannot wait until we get to hang out in the future and have a bloody laugh. So hopefully the next time we see them will either be Electric Century shows or my Chem shows, hopefully. Either way, I'm very, very much looking forward to both, and I can't wait to see the boys. So thank you very much to David and Mikey for giving us your time. It was just I loved it. It's one of my favourite ones so far, I think.
It was just a lovely, wholesome experience. Like, as you said, I think this episode is very special, and it'll connect with a lot of people, but it was just honestly so nice to see them open up about stuff to each other with us. Like, they didn't hide anything. They were very open about some of their personal struggles and all the mad experiences they've both individually had in their separate bands and whatnot. And yeah, it was just really nice to sit down with the both of them and pick their brains about everything. God, they're the kings of concept records. I tell you that, it's such a... unique look into making albums. But yeah, thank you so much again to Mikey and Dave for coming on. As I mentioned earlier, Electric Century's second and brand new self-titled studio album is available to stream and purchase wherever you get records from right now. And the graphic novel is available too. You can pick that up in all good comic and book shops, or if you need some more direct links, just head over to electriccentury.com. I wouldn't mind a copy of the graphic novel myself, because it looks really, really nice. So I might order one straight after this.
Oh, nice. Mm. Yes, good. And then we can get a sign down when we go see him. So that'd be lovely, wouldn't it? Yeah. Yes. Yeah, what a great chat. What a great time reminiscing over things that we got to do together.
Yeah, but that's the thing, Sean, as well, because it's literally like 10 years ago that you did that tour with Mike M supporting them with a blackout.
That's bonkers. Mm. Isn't it? 10 years, like, back in my day. Yeah, it was... Yeah, it's mad, isn't it? And that's the thing. Like, I genuinely believed... I've got brown hair now. I've got brown hair and a mullet, which is completely different to blonde hair and a fringe. So I wasn't expecting Mikey to even remember the blackout, let alone remember, you know, us hanging out with Johnny Phillips at places. Like, so it's just absolutely bonkers to me. So, again, thank you to all those people. Thank you to Mikey Way. Thank you to David Debiak. Thank you to Ailey Connolly. Thank you for Johnny Phillips to introducing me to them many moons ago.
Yeah, I remember going to those shows as well. So this is a cool full circle moment for me. But lovely, lovely chat. With that being said, if you thought this conversation was probably one of the best we've ever done, let us know on our social media pages at
Please do. If you think it's one of the worst we've ever done, let us know.
Just send us a message.
If you think it's mediocre, do you know what? Just let us know what you think about it, right? Yeah. Go to at Sapling Pod on Twitter and Instagram and let us know whether you liked it or you hated it or you didn't care or you haven't bothered listening to it, which is weird because if you now reply into us saying, I didn't bother listening to it, it means you've somehow heard this bit, which is after the best bit of this episode. So if you're listening to this bit and you haven't listened to the interview, that's strange. But tell you what, let us know at Sapling Pod on Instagram and Twitter.
I don't know how that would happen, but fair play to someone if it did. But yeah, just send us a message because we like it anyway. And let us know who you'd like us to have on the podcast in the future. We're always up for suggestions and making mad dreams like this happen. If this is your first time listening to us, please go back through our back catalogue and pick some of the other wonderful conversations we've done. Hit subscribe wherever you're listening. And most importantly, to win our hearts, love, and affection for the rest of your lives, if you head over to patreon.com/sapnin, you get all of that, as well as being included in the best community of all time, which is our SapFan Patreon group, and get loads of bonuses.
Yes, and see some behind-the-scenes stuff, get bonus interviews, photos, Q&As, chats on Zoom or Skype. Yeah, there's loads of options. So yeah, just check out patreon.com/sapnin. And as Morgan said, this is our 122nd episode now. So we've done 121 other episodes. I bet you there's at least three other people that we've done that you like, you know of. And if you haven't, go and check out people you don't know, because some of their stories are super, super interesting. So yeah, let us know what's been your favourite episode so far as well. So again, at Sapling Pod everywhere.
Yes, and speaking of our wonderful community that we love very, 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 very much, because they help us keep this thing going each and every week, we've got some names we would like to thank, Sean. So if you head over to the description of this episode, there's a fucking lot of them in there, right? There's like so many names, I've lost count. So you can have a little read, but also Sean is going to give a massive, gigantic shout out to the elite members of our Sapling Podcast Patreon community. Sometimes they change their names to funny things. We'll find out what they've done now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thank you very much to Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi Leibowey, Janelle Caston, Mitch Perry, Emma Barber, Dilly Grimwood, Nathan Croshaw, Kelly Young, Paul Hirschfield, Scooby Drew Styles, Mikey McDonald's, McMuffin Buns. Thank you very much, Mikey. Liam Connolly, Kelly Ewan, Kat Besant, Sammy G, Amadine Urbano, Shani Meyer Boxel Anderson, Tony Michael, Sarah James, Justin Dunn, Dana Lasnova, Amy Campion, the aforementioned Johnny Phillips, Scott Jones, Dan Gies, TJ, I'm Back You Sexy Mofos, Ambler Shattuck, Simon Amos, Kate Stevenson, Jenny Munster, Inad, oh no, that's Danny Eaton backwards. I see what he's done. Inad Naughty. Clever. Oh, his name doesn't look too bad back. It looks Welsh. Anyway, thank you very much to Lucy Diaz, Emily Senegals, Martina McManus, not a tennis player, Erin Howard, Becky Andy, John and Emma, that's two separate people, Jenny Robertson, Jason Heredia, Louis Cook, Marcy Jacobson, Caroline Robinson, Kelly Cannon, Kevin Clark, Carl Pendbury, Livy Cropper, Stuart McNaught, James McNaught, Tallulah Grant, Lydia Henderson, Sharifa Wadali, Craig Harris, Keris Andrews, Ollie Say Something Naughty Here Amesbury, Chris Howard, Jacob Turner, Josh, what do you call a magician who loses his magic? Ian. Crisp. What do you call a magician who loses his magic? Ian. Crisp. Okay. Thank you very much to Alice Wood, Adam, King of the Goths, Parslow, and by no means least, the mighty Connor Lewins. Thank you very, very much to all those people, their family and their friends. May death come quickly to their enemies.
Wow, that's a weird one. I didn't know where you were going with that then. I was like, okay, cool.
It's good though, isn't it? It is good though.
It is good. But
you know, as long as none of those people's enemies are my family, I stand by what I just said there.
Wow, okay, so, that's a big concept.
If you'd like
taken.
Me to wish death on your enemies, check out patreon.com/sapnin, where I will change your name to your enemy's name and I'll shout them out. No, this is going to turn into, yeah,
he'll do
what
it,
happened with Sapnin Podcast? It started out quite positive for the 121 episodes, and then Sean started naming people that he want that the Patreon members wanted dead. And it turned into like a giant thing. Yeah, that's awful.
Wow, yeah. This has gone very dark. Yeah, yeah. Please don't.
It has gone very dark.
Please don't tell us to kill your enemies. But thank you very much to everyone for listening, everyone in our Patreon community for being top superstars, and for anyone getting this far, because we do appreciate it, and every second of your listening helps. Is that a sentence? I'll go with it anyway. But before we wrap things up, Sean, you're still in a band called Raiders Band UK. Tell us about
that. It's called Raiders, but you find it everywhere at Raiders Band UK.
Yeah, that's why I say Raiders Band UK, because if anyone types Raiders Band UK, that comes up quicker.
Yeah, well, we didn't call them Electric Century Band America, did we? So
that's true.
We called Raiders, but on socials and everything, at Raiders Band UK, at Raiders UK on the listening stuff, the streaming services and that. We got 4 songs up. Please give them a listen, because at the moment, it feels like we have wasted our time putting out those 3 songs that we put out last year when the pandemic happened. So please give them a listen.
Would you say you've wasted away? Because it's one of your songs.
I'm not saying another fucking thing now.
Well, we'll be back next week, next Friday, Friday with a very special guest. And next week's episode is very... It takes a trip down memory lane for the two of us. So I'm excited for it.
Oh, I just realised. Yeah. And that'll be episode 123.
It will. Huh? Nice one.
Oh, I also said I wasn't going to talk for the rest of this episode. So.
Caught you out.
Fuck. Fuck you, Mog. Anyway, let's fucking go.
Yes. Wow. Fucking. What?
You drunk, you? Bro, it's quarter past 12. It's 25 past 12 and you're steaming already. What's this?
Oh, it's been a long week. But love every single person in the world that is not racist.
Do you? Oh, yeah.
I don't want to.
I hate everybody who's racist, so there you go. That's cool. Yeah, I love everybody who's not racist. Oh. Anyway, let's go. Sapne! Sexism's the same, mind. I feel the same way about that. What's wrong with people, man?
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.